students is always a delight. And you've heard from some of our more outspoken students, Paul and Mark and Carol, but they're not all that way. Some of them are a little shy. And you have an opportunity to interact with those shy students as well. One of them was having a little bit of difficulty in terms of trying to work out how he was going to get to know this girl that kept sitting beside him in one of his classes. And he sought some advice from some of our people there on what to do about it. And they tried the best they could and finally suggested that he go down to the local bookstore and see if he could find a book that would help him overcome his shyness and find out a way that he could meet this charming young lady. Well, he got down to the bookstore, and being as shy as he was, he didn't want to go up and ask the clerk what to look for. I mean, what kind of a book do you look for? And doesn't that involve subjects like love? And how am I going to find it? So he walked up and down the aisles, and he finally found a book that said, How to Hug. So he thought, that's it. So he went and he bought it, and he got it home, and he opened it up, and here it was, How to Hug, Volume 8 of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Always fun and always a challenge, and you never know what students are going to come up with next. One of the most universal cravings of our time is a hunger for compelling and creative leadership. That was the opening statement that James McGregor Burns wrote in his classic book on leadership in 1978. But it could have just as well been taken out of today's editorials. Indeed, if you study leadership, if you study institutions and businesses and organizations, you discover that there's a tremendous gap in our world called the leadership vacuum. I think Leroy Ines of Navigators said it rather well in his book, and I quote, "A crisis of leadership engulfs the world. Political leaders, economic experts, editorial writers, newsmen, spokesmen in the field of education and religion raise the hue and cry. For men and women who know the way and can lead others in the right path are few. And sad to say, so many of the failures have become household names for us. And we are challenged to find a new style of leadership. And in that new style of leadership and the plethora of books that are being published, one of them that I've enjoyed is Dale Carnegie and his associates writing The Leader in You, in which he wrote, more than ever, businesses, schools, charities, civic groups, and others need leaders who can help people achieve their potential, establish a vision for the future, coach and mentor, and foster successful relationships. That most definitely is part of the leadership challenge that we face in educating young men and women at Trinity Western University. And what is the role of universities in this? Well, for a long time, universities did not see this as part of their task. That was a responsibility of someone other than the universities. But in 1990, the pressure on the presidents of the Association of Universities and Colleges of Canada, indeed all of the universities of this country, got together and said, we must do something about this. And so they set up an independent commission of inquiry to find out what was wrong with Canadian university education. Dr. Stuart Smith was the key person in that report, and his report back to the presidents made it quite clear that there was an expectation in Western society that the universities would take a responsibility for the development of the leaders that are necessary in our economic development in the future. And the universities were challenged to do something about this. That should not surprise us, because business was clamoring at the university's doors, saying there are three things that are missing. In the Everett study that was done a few years ago, university students don't know how to write when they graduate, they have no vision, and they have no leadership skills. What are you going to do about it? The Conference Board of Canada brought together 25 major employers in this country, and they asked them, what is it that you are seeking from university graduates? And they came up with 25 critical skills: academic, personal management skills, teamwork skills, all ones that would fit in any curriculum vitae, such things as thinking critically and acting logically to evaluate situations and solve problems and make decisions. Honesty, integrity, and personal ethics, intuitive energy and persistence to get the job done, accountability for actions taken, working in a team, and above all, leadership. That was the challenge that was given. Would universities respond to that? We at Trinity Western University took it seriously. And the reason that we took it seriously, because we believe that the fundamental thing in education is not just learning, but in life learning and preparing students who are going to go into the marketplace. And to do that, they must be equipped to get jobs. And that is a competitive society today. So our graduates must be one step better than those from other institutions if they're going to find employment in that competitive marketplace. So when the freshmen come in each year, I say, when you begin to prepare for that job, you not only should have your academic credentials, and they will be available to you in your transcript telling you what courses you've taken, the marks you've done, but I challenge them to write a resume based upon the qualities that employers in this country are saying they want from their university graduates. What have you learned in your biology class, in your history class, in your physical education class that has contributed to the development of these skills, attitudes, and behaviors? Because that is going to be the critical thing in the future for you getting a job. Not the fact that you have a BA or a Bachelor of Science. Not the fact that you have good marks. It's the personal qualities that are going to count. And in an information age, as we read in books about this challenge in the future, that is going to be at the very forefront. How well can you learn? Not how much do I know? As Will Rogers once said, even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. Of course, today is a fast-paced age. The challenge of new ideas and new information that pours off the presses and across the media and through electronic means is with us. And consequently, for the young person going in to a university today, the challenges are even greater than ever before, certainly much greater than the time when I went to university, and probably for most of you as well. You see, you have to make decisions. And when you make a decision, for example, about where you're going to buy your snacks, it may have something to do with your digestion or perhaps indigestion. But it's not going to fundamentally make any difference on how you think. Where you buy your jeans may determine whether you comfortably walk and sit, but it's not going to make much difference to you in terms of the development of your inner being. You may work in an environment of profanity, which is not very pleasant, but if you're strong, you can stand apart from it, and it will not impact your personality. But where you go to university, where you get your education, is vitally important, because that is where you learn how to think. And the institution that you go to shapes the way in which you see the world and develop the personal values that is going to take you into that world. And if you're here tonight wondering which university should I be choosing, I've written a little outline of questions that you should be asking yourself, and I'd be happy to share that with you for any of you who are interested. Because the fundamental question is, from which philosophical base do I wish to be educated? And we in the Christian community should be asking the same thing. From which philosophical base do we want the church leaders, both lay and pastorate, to be educated in the future? Because education is not just a cognitive learning skill. Education is about values. Education is about evaluating actions and making decisions. And there's no such thing as a value-neutral education. It's a question of whose values or what values that you're going to intake during that process. The answer will be radically different if you go to a secular, atheistic institution than if you go to a Christian institution where the value base is rooted in God and His teaching and His instructions. And that endures forever. As you look at the university scene, you will find that there are many challenging books that have been written about it recently. I commend you to examine some of them. Probably the best known is Alan Bloom's book, The closing of the American mind, a devastating critique of what university education is on this continent. Another more recent one is Dinesh D'Souza, illiberal education, and what has happened to the person who is so shrunk in their specialization that they don't know how to live in today's society. One of the things that Smith was doing was saying the universities have lost their direction. They're educating specialists who don't know how to think. And the world is saying we want people who know how to think. And more recently, the most recent book that's come out is by Martin Anderson, Imposters in the Temple, subtitled American Intellectuals Are Destroying Our Universities and Cheating Our Students of Their Future. A challenging look at what is happening inside education and higher education today. I challenge you to look at the educational institutions of this country and to evaluate them. Or you can turn to Maclean's magazine and you'll get a ranking of them. But unfortunately, Trinity Western University, or maybe fortunately, is not included in that. We'd be happy to be included if they would simply put the criteria that we think is important to determine a good education. We'll match them university to university in the number of doctorates in our faculty. We'll match them on the quality of education, the size of classes, in any of those areas. And so tonight I want to tell you some of the things of how I would look at Trinity Western University as we rank ourselves in the light of education in this country today. There's no question that at the forefront you must have sound academic quality. Being a Christian can never be second rate. You have to be good if you're going to be competitive in the world. And we have our credentials rooted in our membership in the Association of Universities and Colleges of Canada. Dr. Snyder and I have the privilege of representing the university in meetings throughout the year of our colleagues from across the country. The academic dean at the University of Windsor recently said to me, "Trinity Western University is where I would like my son to go to university." And the academic dean at the University of Calgary has already sent his son to Trinity Western. It's the quality of what you offer. Our professors participate in provincial-wide articulation meetings to ensure that what we teach in biology or chemistry is equal to what is being taught at Simon Fraser University or University of Victoria and any other area. Our professors are the key to the ability to provide that quality of education. Six of them now have written textbooks that are used in universities across this country. I think of Pell and Downey in English, Sutcliffe in computer science, Philip Chuck in psychology, and Van Brummelen in education. We have a faculty that has won international recognition, most clearly in the music area. Our choir on Friday night was performing with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. The director of that choir has twice won the Canada Council Award for the top conductor in this country. Professor Clausen in our history department recently was honored by the Czechoslovakian government with a silver medallion for an outstanding contribution to European history. Professor Scott has just returned to us from a year's leave where he was awarded a von Humboldt Fellowship in Germany, one of 180 professors in 45 years from Canadian universities who have received this honor, and the only Canadian to ever receive the honor in religious studies. What a tribute. Last year, Professor Sutherland's book on bankruptcy, business ethics, and the Bible won two international awards. Last year, there was a competition in French language across this country for the best literary piece written in French. Our professor of French, Kelsey Haskett, won the prize for British Columbia. We regularly participate in debates and discussions with our colleagues in other institutions. We are not living in an ivory tower. We want to be out in society and meeting society where there's a. Paul Chamberlain in our philosophy department has twice been invited to debate professors at the University of British Columbia. It's an exciting opportunity to go out and talk about, is there or is there not a God, and what difference does it make? And to confront the atheists and the agnostics and the secularists and the humanists in their own backyard. I'm proud of him, and I'm not surprised that he has the ability to do this. He's an expert in philosophy and apologetics, but he is also the top PhD student from one of the United States' outstanding universities in the last 10 years. When I look to hire faculty, it's always a challenge. Where are we going to find not only competent faculty, but dynamic, committed Christians? Because that's got to be at the uppermost. I was recently looking for a professor of computer science, also political science, and indeed I hired a professor from the University of Western Ontario to come to Trinity Western, and the reason that he wanted to come is he said, I don't want to continue to teach a mass of students, and when they give me a class of over 400 students, I can't educate them, I can't relate to them, and they won't let me mention Jesus Christ. And so he's come to Trinity as a committed Christian to be able to teach political science from a Christian perspective. Joy McCullough joined us in the education department. Joy was a Canadian who had taught elementary and secondary school. She'd gone to Ohio State University, the number one institution in the United States for postgraduate education studies. She'd done exceptionally well. She was their top student. In fact, she was one of the two top students in all PhD programs in education in the United States. She was offered the plum position of all at Texas A&M University's education department. There were 102 candidates. She scored number one, and she turned them down to come to Trinity Western University. Why? Because she is committed to teaching young men and women from a Christian perspective to make a difference in the world. And we value people who are committed to good teaching. When I hired computer scientists from the University of Toronto, my first question to the dean was, I'm only interested in considering this individual if you can assure me that he's in the top 30% of professors in terms of student evaluations of their teaching capacities. When he met that criteria, then we are ready to proceed to the next step. That's the quality of the faculty that I, as dean, am trying to build. But as you look at all of that quality, you say, what is the impact? Does it really make a difference? Well, that surely is in our graduates. If they don't represent that same excellence, then somehow we haven't succeeded. And I'm proud to say that our graduates are making a tremendous impact in the graduate schools around this country. We have had our students win the prestigious National Research Council scholarships. 2 weeks ago, it was my privilege to present $10,000 in Canada scholarships to three of our freshman students in science for their outstanding work in their first semester with us in that field. University of British Columbia tells us that students coming out of our business program invariably rank better than students from any other program coming into their commerce program. The valedictorian a couple of years ago that's well known to some of the alumni who are here tonight, Ken Jacobson, an outstanding student leader, went on to do doctoral studies at Queen's University, is their number one English graduate in PhD studies. 2 years ago, a young lady that I had the privilege of mentoring because she was vice president of student council, Kim Hazelwood, not only won the silver medal for the outstanding student at the university, but she went on to write the entrance exams to law schools. These are law examinations that are written for entrance into any law school in North America. She scored in the top 1%. She was offered scholarships to go to Harvard and Stanford, and she has now gone to Stanford. But what excites me is not the fact that someday she will be, I hope, a brilliant lawyer. What excites me is Kim's walk with the Lord. She was at the very heart of the prayer movement on our campus, a dynamic and committed Christian. She took 6 months off to go and work with Mother Teresa. Brilliant person. Why did she do it? Because she wanted to see what it was really like to work with the underprivileged. Kim's desire is to serve the Lord Jesus Christ as a lawyer who will reach out for the concerns of the poor, the underprivileged, the downtrodden. So she went to the slums of Calcutta to see what it was really like to have to live and work and minister to those people. This year at Regent University, a fine arts scholarship was given to a girl who wrote a tremendous play at Trinity Western University last year on the creation in a modern setting. It was so successful that our students packed out every time she put that play on, and then it toured the rest of British Columbia for the summer as others had the opportunity to be ministered to. What is God's creation and what does it mean in society today? That young lady has a tremendous future in Christian drama ahead of her. But let me allow some of the students to speak for themselves. A recent graduate who's at law school at the University of Idaho wrote, "Academically, TWU has more than prepared me for law school at the University of Idaho. I left Trinity with about a 3.03 grade point average. After my first year of law school, I presently have a GPA of 3.29, and I'm 8th in my class of 98. He is also president of the local chapter of the Christian Legal Society in a largely predominant Mormon university. And he attributes his ability to give leadership in that area to the fact that he was a resident assistant at Trinity Western." From Gerald Bilks, currently studying at Princeton University, "My experience during the past year has demonstrated to me how well Trinity Western has served to prepare me for graduate studies. Trinity's integration of faith and academics has proven to go beyond a simple motto and become true to the enrichment of both faith and academics. In my first year at Princeton, I've been able to maintain a cumulative grade point average of 3.9 out of a possible 4.0. This, in my opinion, is indicative of the value of TWU. That was in his first year. He's just completed his second year, and along with another Trinity Western graduate, Melody Knowles, the two of them won the two top prizes in Old Testament studies at Princeton. Not all students have such high GPAs, but it is possible. And even those that don't, you build into their lives and you see them grow. When I think of Phil, I see a student who's dramatically changed. Phil's in his graduating year and has just received the top marks in our capstone course on how you integrate your Christian faith with the disciplines you study that we call IDISC 400. And this was an essay and an examination that he wrote on how best to integrate biblical truth into his field and into knowledge generally. I remember when I first met Phil, he was hitchhiking, and I was driving back to the campus, and I pulled off to pick him up. He got in the car. He had long hair, an earring in his ear. He had a coat that was about six sizes too big for him, looked like it'd come out of some army surplus store. He had a pair of shoes that looked like they walked around the world. And I said to him, "Phil, what brought you to Trinity Western?" He said, "I don't know, except that my parents insisted that I go here." And I thought, wow, we're into a great start. Well, Phil was a little lost. He didn't know why he was there. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. He was superb on the stage, acted in a number of Trinity's plays, but he really didn't have a focus to his life. And yet here he is in his graduating year, topping our capstone course in faith. Well, Phil still has his long hair, and he still has his earring, but he's committed to going on to graduate school to become a professor of English, and he will be an excellent one. And he's got a ministry focus that is going to reach people that probably I will never be able to reach. But Phil has a love of the Lord Jesus Christ in his heart. He's got a vision and a ministry ahead of him, and he's proven himself academically to make the grade. What a change around in that young man. And I could tell you many other stories similar to that. But it's more than a sound academic program. It's learning from a Christian perspective. You can go to many universities and get a good education, biology or communications or physics. physical education or psychology. And you can be a good Christian throughout that. But where are you going to go to learn how to be a Christian biologist, a Christian media expert, a Christian teacher, except that your philosophy of teaching is embedded in the truth and the reality of God's revelation to us? For us, truth is not relative or transitory. It's rooted in God's word, which is for eternal and basic foundations of all that we are and all that we believe. And so we equip our students to handle the secular controversies of this world from a Christian perspective, to make a difference in who they are going to be and how they are going to live. No public institution is able to do that. And yet the challenge remains. Brian Stiller concluded in a recent talk that he gave on Canada, given this dominant secular humanistic liberal ideology ruling so much of Canadian public life, it is no wonder that many live without hope. At Trinity Western, we provide that hope. Because there is hope in Jesus Christ. And in the darkness of this world, there is the light of Christ that shines and propels us and sends us forward. And it's in that hope that we can face tomorrow, whatever that may be. And that's what we want to instill in our students and give them the strength to stand as Christians in the marketplaces of this world. You see, it's not only their Christian perspective, but it's also their life perspective that is going to enable them to do that. Management experts tell us that to be successful at the present time, 15% is based upon your technical competence. When I went to university, the only thing that mattered was whether I was technically competent in my field of studies. The world out there is saying that's only worth 15% today. 30% is based upon your people skills and 55% on how well you manage yourself. Isn't that what Conference Board of Canada was saying and the values that they were looking at, honesty, integrity, teamwork, those aren't skills that you learn in a disciplinary area, but they are important in being competitive, in being part of society, of the world that we face today. And so for us, it's what we call total student development. We have to integrate our living and our learning and our life in such a way that they all match together. Our theme for doing that is taken out of Luke chapter 2, verse 52, where it says that Jesus grew in stature and in wisdom and in favor with God and men. In other words, he grew intellectually, physically, socially, and spiritually. And we believe that those four coming together are at the very heart of what a university education should be. And on top of that, we add leadership development. It's the heart of our mission because the world is crying out for those qualities of leadership wherever you may be, in church, in your community, as a mother, as a father, you are in a position of having to give leadership. And it's our focus is on servanthood leadership. What makes us different in the world? Servanthood leadership model is based upon Jesus. It's rooted in the Hebrew word for leadership, naged, N-A-G-I-Y-D. It has its roots in the sense of a person under authority and carrying out the responsibilities of that authority. It's the kind of person that God was looking for to give leadership to that nation of Israel throughout so many difficult times. It's the kind of person who knows where they're coming from and can respond in an appropriate way. So when you see leaders referred to in the Old Testament, Abraham, Moses, Caleb, Joshua, Isaiah, all of these were a reference to servant leaders, to serve God and to serve people combined. That's the challenge and that's the difference for us in the quality of leadership that we are putting forward. And we have become, in our own right, leaders in this regard. 2 weeks' time, I will be going to Washington, D.C. to meet with the academic and student affairs deans of 85 members of the Christian College Coalition. And the reason that we're having a meeting is that they want to learn how to develop leaders and leadership qualities in their students. And I think it's a tremendous privilege that Trinity Western University should be invited to give the leadership to that teaching, because we, more than anyone else, have developed, first of all, a theology of Christian leadership that has never been written before. And secondly, we have developed the means of doing this throughout our liberal arts and science and professional curriculum.